from stpetecatalyst.com.
Joining me on My Mayor's Candidate, Ken Welch. Hello, sir. How's life on the campaign trail?
Life is great, Joe. How are you doing?
I'm living the dream.
Absolutely. Great to be with you. Well, this week was a great week. I had the opportunity to travel to six neighborhoods along with the NAACP and supported by St. Pete Police and Parks and Rec in what we were calling community conversations. And that was in response to the violence and shootings that we've seen in St. Pete. So we went to Childs Park, Camel Park, Bartlett Park, Lake Vista, Lakewood Terrace Bayou, Highlands, and Wildwood on consecutive nights last week, ending on Saturday. And I'd say at each of those events, there were 20 to 30 people. We sat in a big circle. The St. Pete Police blocked off the streets, and it really was like an old-fashioned neighborhood gathering. And it was so insightful to hear from neighbors and young people, educators, about what we can do to build a safer community, learn some really interesting things about what's happening in some of our neighborhoods. But I thought it was a really a great way of communicating in a different way. I want to thank Esther Eugene and the NAACP for sponsoring that. I think more of that needs to happen. And I was really, it really was an honor and a privilege to attend each of those and to interact with so many of our citizens. So it was a great week.
That sounds really impactful. So today we're talking about technology innovations in science and how you might explore or implement different kinds of innovations in science and tech as mayor.
Yeah.
So what are your thoughts on that?
So this is my life story, Joe, and just a great question. You're going to have to stop me, I'm sure. But so I'm a professed geek. I wear that as a badge of honor. I'm an accountant. By trade, my bachelor's from USF St. Pete is in accounting. And I also kind of floated into technology, and it was an interesting circumstance. So I'm a person that likes to actually read the manuals, whether it's a car or a device or software. I actually like to read the manual because whoever created that wants you to get everything out of that product. And so I've always done that. And after Florida Power hired me out of Florida A&M, where I received my master's, they were actually recruiting in Tallahassee and hired me to work at what is now the Ceridian building on 34th Street South. But I worked as an associate accountant. But again, I was kind of the geek of the accounting department, if that's even a thing that's possible. But I would always tell folks, here's how you do this in Excel. Here's how you do the macro. Here's how you do some Visual Basic. And I was anointed as that guy. And so someone in management had the idea that the accounts payable department, now this is Florida Power, which is now Duke Energy. So it's a statewide organization. They ran the nuclear plant and other plants around the state. So all the AP invoices came into this location, and it was a paper process. You know, they'd move the invoices from desk to desk in a 20-person department, process it through the mainframe. And management one day said, hey, Ken, we're going to go to digital workflow and imaging. We're going to digitize all these invoices, route them digitally. We're going to put 19-inch black and white monitors on everyone's workstation. And you're going to be the person who implements it. I said, OK, Bob, that was my boss. And they sent me off to California to do a week of training at ViewStar and learn that ViewStar workflow and imaging system. Came back, worked with our tech folks, our DBAs, and a consultant, got it implemented. And that system ran at Florida Power, and that was kind of my entree into technology. I went on to become their PeopleSoft general ledger administrator for the entire company, which means I closed the books for Florida Power every month, trained hundreds of users, and taught them how to use the technology. And then did the same thing at St. Petersburg College and at Raymond James as well. And then finally, at the Board of County Commissioners, I served on the BTS board for many years as chair. And that's the Business Technology Services board, which includes all of the county agencies, sheriff, clerk of the court, tax collector, supervisor of elections. And we made some really important investments in technology at the county level as well. And so what I've learned through all of that experience in the private sector, and I didn't even go into my family's tax business where I actually was running cables for our Lantastic network. And somebody will know what I'm talking about there. But what I've learned is a couple of things. Number one, the worst thing you can do is lay new technology down on a bad business process. Technology in itself does not fix a broken business process. And I'm not saying that processes in St. Peter are broken, but I also believe that you need to periodically review all of your systems, all of your business processes to make sure you are meeting the needs of your customers, be they internal or external. And so I've been meeting with cabinet members in the city and talking about, you know, how they go about their jobs, how technology works, what they see on the horizon. So I would start there with a business process review and seeing what the gaps are. So that would be the first step. The second step is that I found is often IT managers, and it's just their nature, are kind of guardians of technology. They're gatekeepers in technology. Often we have technology that we are not anywhere near fully utilizing the technology that we already have. And I've seen that time after time where there's functionality built into an ERP system or some other system, and it hasn't been unlocked by the IT department because it uses too many resources or for some other reason. So secondly, let's look at what we have and make sure we're using all the functionality that is in the given system that we have. And then finally, the final thing is training. A lot of organizations fall short in that they buy these expensive solutions and they don't train their employees on how to fully utilize it. That is one of the best investments you can make after you've bought a big software package, is to actually train your employees on how to get the most out of it. So those are my three approaches. Look at your business processes, make sure that you have unlocked the functionality of what you have already, and then train your employees. Having said all that, there are three trends that are probably undeniable in terms of where I think we'll go. And this is already happening to some extent as I talk with Tom Green and some of the other folks there. Number one, cloud-based approaches, whether it's just storing data, but more and more actually running your apps from the cloud so that you don't have on-premises hardware or software anymore. You just have a device to access that application. I think that more and more will be the reality. Governments have shied away from that in the past, but you can't replicate the scale that a Google or Amazon has in terms of cloud-based technology. The second thing is GIS applications. More and more that is going to be integrated in everything we do, whether it's C-click fix, you know, reporting a down stop sign or knowing where your pipe is, your sewer pipe is, and how old it is. And so I think those things and certainly integrating sea level rise flood maps with our GIS system is vitally important as well. And so those are the things that I think will continue to drive our technology. And then the final thing would be making everything we do easily accessible from a mobile device, as more folks are going to be untethered from their desktops and they expect the experience on their mobile device to be the same as it was on their desktop.
So at the beginning, you said you were a self-professed geek, and as one, you've seen over the decades that there have been waves of anti-intellectualism in the country. There, you know, people have tied intelligence to elitism and whatnot. And now, you know, with the internet age, there's sort of the rise of the developer and the geek. So, and when it comes to St. Pete, where do you think the regard for geeks and or intelligence, do you think we have it right? You think they're not held in high enough regard, or, you know, where do you think we sit as a community?
I think we're in a good position. I also think it's balancing out as younger and younger people, they don't have any fear of technology. You give a three-year-old a device and they're already trying to use it as a touchscreen. I mean, they don't have that fear of technology. It becomes more an appliance, you know, it's something that's just part of life. And so I think we're in a good position. And I think the young folks are putting us in a good place as well. And not just young folks. I mean, how many seniors, and I'll talk about my mother as an example. My mother would be 88 this year. You know, through this pandemic, we got her new iPad and her phone. I mean, they've learned how to interface using modern technology. And so it's not really an ageist thing anymore. It's about how do we access information? And more it's through our devices and through the internet. What it does highlight is the digital divide. If you don't have that access to the internet, then you really have, you're so far behind everyone else. And so it does highlight that that need to make sure there's equity in terms of access to our new digital society.
Thank you. And people look to the city for their infrastructure, you know, their roads, their parks. When you extend that into the digital realm, what aspects of the digital world would you consider under the purview of city infrastructure?
You know, for so long, we've talked about and looked at making sure that there's access to the internet throughout the city. And I still want to look at that. You know, there have been solutions talked about over the years where even, you know, Spectrum and other companies offer free Wi-Fi, in certain parts of the city, particularly if you're their customer, you get it. But we've seen in other cities where it's made to be a public resource. And so that's one thing that I definitely want to look at further, particularly as we talk about addressing the education gap. You know, if a child doesn't have access to the internet to access resources, they are really far behind. And so, again, as we're mapping out resources in the community, I think we need to identify where those gaps are in terms of affordable access to the internet throughout our city.
That's great. And most new startups, we're aspiring to be a hub for startups in the community. And most new startups have some elements of technology in them. Have you thought about how we might increase our and improve our ecosystem with regards to starting new companies and growing them here in St. Pete?
Well, one thing we learned, Joe, that everything is linked. And so to me, number one, if it's not affordable, you're not going to attract those companies or those employees. If you don't have a transportation system that meets their expectations, as most other metros do, you're not going to be able to draw them and keep them here. If you don't have a safe community, if you don't have a right approach to equity. So I think all of those things matter in making sure we've got an environment that's attractive and affordable for those folks who want to move here and either create those startups or work in one of those startups.
Thank you. Ken Welch, my mayor. It's good to see you again. And always catch up with you in a couple weeks.
All right, Joe. Thank you. All right.
From stpcatalyst.com.